Okay, it's a real pleasure to be here. Okay, today I speak about some recent quantum hydrodynamics models which we derived with Kristen Ringhofer from Arizona State University. And the last part of the talk will also be joint work with Florian Meatz, who is a collaborator of me in Toulouse. As you notice, I didn't really update my slides from a Beijing meeting which occurred a few weeks ago. So, okay, I'll skip this slide to rush to the motivation of this work. So actually the motivation would be trying to provide some macroscopic models of, say, Euler or Navier-Stokes type to quantum mechanics. So if I make this little a table where I here I put microscopic models that that are you know, that describe the physics at the very microscopic level. So for me, microscopic level will be the Boltzmann equation. Actually, there are more microscopic models than that. Actually, for instance, Professor Reza Kanlu yesterday actually showed us some particle models. But for me, microscopic will be a Boltzmann equation. And if you look at the classical framework, classical mechanics framework, actually the microscopic models are well established and since the work of Boltzmann and Maxwell, actually. And actually macroscopic models too, they are, for instance, Euler, Navier-Stokes equation, diffusion equations, and so on and so forth. And, well, actually, historically, fluid models arose before kinetic models, and actually kinetic theory was sort of set up by Boltzmann to reconcile Newtonian mechanics, which is time reversible, with fluid mechanics, which is time irreversible, if you look at, for instance, the heat equation. And, since then, there has been a lot of work in deriving the fluid models from the microscopic models. That has been a very, very active field since, say, the last two centuries now. In comparison to this classical mechanics situation, the quantum mechanics situation is less complete. Microscopic models for quantum mechanics are sort of well established, although in the collisionless regime, essentially, that's the, yeah. Yeah, sure, I agree. This is what
misleading to say that fluid mechanics is sort of a reduction of Boltzmann only. Fluid mechanics is more general than that.
Yeah, I agree. Agree. Okay, so I thank you for pointing out this gap in this slide, actually, but yeah, you're right, but I wanted to make things simple. So so by comparison, actually, macroscopic models in quantum theory are very scarce. There is basically one which holds for basically one particle hydrodynamics, which is you will agree with me that one particle hydrodynamics is a very, very small system. And from there are some perturbative extensions to many particle systems, but which are very, very special. So I'd like to try to focus on that box and try to provide some way of say maybe addressing this problem. Okay, that's the motivation. Since it's I was asked to make a kind of review talk, so I will be rather slow in trying to introduce the concept that underlie this approach to quantum hydrodynamics, and this starts by reviewing the classical hydrodynamic theories. So microscopic, as I said, for me, microscopic, and I agree there are some other views of microscopic. Microscopic theory starts with the Boltzmann equation. So this Boltzmann equation we've seen already, with f of x pt being the number of particles at position x with momentum p and time t. And this equation basically describes how motion of the free motion of the particles under a certain force, which I here take as a gradient of the potential, grad xv. So that's the free motion, and it's balanced by the contribution of collisions, either binary collisions or collisions with certain obstacles, like for the Lorentz gas, for instance. And on the other hand, macroscopic models deal with quantities which are only dependent on configuration space, x and time, such as the density, mean velocity, and temperature. And say the prototype of a macroscopic model is the Euler equation. It's just a balance equation which tells you how mass, momentum, and energy is going to evolve in time in terms of certain fluxes, mass, momentum, and energy fluxes. And here is the contribution of the force term. And actually, in writing this equation, I've already put that here, this term here, and actually concealed in this term here, is the fact that the pressure is the product of the density time temperature, which means that I've already embedded a closure relation, which is in this setting the perfect gas equation of state. So now the point is how to relate the two descriptions, the Boltzmann equation and the Euler equation. Actually, this is the subject of this has been the subject of many talks here, so I'll go quite fast. So one way of doing this, and this is not the only way, the one way of doing this is by using the moment methods. So you just notice that these hydrodynamic quantities are just integrals of the distribution function with respect to momentum with certain pre-factors here. And so the natural idea to go from the Boltzmann equation to the Euler equation is just pre-multiplying by these functions of p, the Boltzmann equation, integrating with respect to p, and looking at what we get. And so here, of course, I'm going to get from this term the time evolution of the mass, momentum, and energy. I'll get fluxes from this term. The force term is going to arise from the contribution of this term. And I'll use the conservation equations that state that during a collision, and here I make some assumptions about the collisions, that collisions preserve mass, momentum, and energy. So if I do that, then I end up with the following system, which is very close to the Euler equation, but for the fact that here, in these integrals so far, there are terms that I do not know how to express in terms of mass, momentum, and energy. For instance, the off diagonal terms of this tensor p times p, or this third order moment p squared p, cannot be in general expressed as functions of n, q, and w. And so this system of equations is not closed, and actually if you go beyond that, if you add more moments, you get the same problems, because you always have this factor p here, which sort of asks you to look at the next moment. So you have to close the equation, and this is where probably this presentation differs from the standard one, and actually this presentation has been emphasized by Dave Levermore for building higher moment hierarchies. And so the idea is that I'm going to say that although the collision operator preserves mass, momentum, and energy and actually disappears from these equations, actually there is a ghost effect of this collision operator, is that somewhere it also dissipates the entropy. And so if in the closure I'm going to assume that this collision operator is going to dissipate the entropy infinitely fast, and so I'm going to relax instantaneously the distribution function to the entropy minimizer, subject to the fact that I'm looking at definite values of the mass, momentum, and energy. So that's the entropy minimization principle. I'm going to suppose I'm given mass, momentum and u and energy related to the temperature T given, then I'm going to try to look at a distribution function which satisfies the following problem: minimize the entropy, which is this integral of f log f minus 1 dp, subject to the fact that these quantities are given. If I do that, I can solve very easily this minimization problem, and I get to the very standard Maxwellian M and UT given by this expression. Okay? And of course, NU and T are tailored such that if you take the moments of M, you recover the usual expressions of the mass, momentum, and energy. Okay, so if in the expressions of the fluxes that are here, I insert the solution of the entropy minimization problem, that is the Maxwellian, then I'm able to express these terms in terms of these three quantities. And that gives me the closure which leads me to the Euler equation. And actually, Dave proposed to do that for higher moments, and actually the problem there is that the entropy minimization problem, if you consider more moments, is finding a solution to the entropy minimization problem becomes a rather hard problem. Okay, the idea is to do that for the quantum case, and the idea seems to be seducing. However, it's not so simple. So I'd like to now to give you an idea of how you can do that. So for that purpose, I need a certain number of basic objects of quantum statistical mechanics. So I assume that you're not all familiar with these objects, although they are very classical, so I'm going to review them very, very briefly. So the basic object of quantum statistical mechanics is the density operator. So the density operator, you shouldn't be afraid of this object. Actually, what's the idea? The idea is that you have a quantum system which is described by a certain number of states. Say, think of the eigenstates of the system, for instance. So phi s are the states that describe your quantum system. However, you have a large number of particles, and you do not know exactly how many particles are lying on each state. All you know about this is a certain probability. So for each state, you have a certain probability, rho s, to find particles on this state. Okay? So that means that this rho s is a number between 0 and 1, and as a probability, if you sum up all these probabilities over all the states, you should find 1. Okay? So you have now you have a list of objects. You have the list of your, say, states phi s and the list of the probabilities rho s, and you would like to do some bookkeeping of that. And actually, the best way to do that is to build an operator whose eigenstates are the phi s and whose eigenvalues are the rho s. So I've written this operator rho for you here. So it acts on a function psi in such a way that it gives you the sum of the rho s, the probabilities rho s, the inner product of psi on phi s times phi s. So this box here, psi phi s is just the projection of the eigenfunction psi onto the state phi s, and then you sum up these projections by multiplying by the rho s. Okay? Yeah? Yeah, sure. If you have even one particle, but you have only a probabilistic description of the system, you have to do that. Okay. Yeah, that's right. Good point. Thank you. So that object by definition is going to be a Hermitian positive trace class operator. So trace class means that the sum of the rho s is finite, and actually the sum is 1. So the trace of this operator is unity. All right. So if you imagine that each of the eigenfunction phi s is a solution of the Schrödinger equation, and that the rho s actually aren't evolving in time, are constant in time, then from these two assumptions you easily find an equation for the rho, and this is what's called the quantum Liouville equation. So that would be I h bar dt rho equals the commutator of the Hamiltonian with rho. So that's just h rho minus rho h. Actually, here I've added a Q of rho because I want to have in mind that this system, that the particles are going to interact in a certain fashion, either binary or more, or with a certain background, so that I'd like to account for the possibility of these collisions. But I don't want so far to describe precisely what Q of rho is. And maybe later on I will have time to show you possible expressions of this Q of rho. Okay? So that's the quantum milieu. Yeah?
You're taking the road to be real, and there's no complex
thing. Oh, yeah, sure. It's an operator. It is an operator which acts on function of square integrable functions defined on RD with complex values. Yeah, actually, I forgot to mention that the psi here are, of course, complex values. They are wave functions, so they are complex valued. But as an Hermitian operator, the eigenvalues are real, of course, yeah, because it's an Hermitian operator.
Anyway, the psi s don't have to be solutions of the Schrodinger equation. Any basis corresponding to the boundary conditions will do to the psi s.
For a given state, yes, but then when the state evolves, you have to assume that there are solutions of the Schrodinger equation. Or you can actually do some mixed representation where you would evolve them differently. Yeah, that's a possibility, yeah, of course, but then the equation is different. Yeah, you can do many things.
Your rho is
The rho is an operator which goes from the complex-valued functions on RD to the complex-valued function of RD. You see that the rho projects, this guy projects phi s, psi onto phi s. Phi s is an eigen, say, for instance, an eigenvalue of the system, so it might be complex-valued. It's a complex-valued function. So this, psi, this thing projects psi on the phi s, and then I sum up the various projections with this probability rho s. So I deal with complex objects, yeah. I deal with operators on complex valued functions. Yeah, that's absolutely. So we'll see actually many eyes later on. So don't worry about complex nature of the objects. All right, so an alternate and a completely equivalent description of a quantum statistical system is via the Wigner equation. So actually from the operator rho, you can define a transformation which defines you a what we call a symbol, or if actually that could be also a distribution function, defined on the product space of position and momentum. So, okay, I don't want to enter the details of this transformation. You have to define what's called the integral kernel of the operator and then make certain Fourier transforms. And what's important is that here, you have, so really, the interpretation of x as being the position and p the momentum. And, of course, you can go backwards. And if you're given a symbol, a function of x and p, you can define an operator rho by what's called a wild quantization that's given by this formula. So that's an operator which acts on the function psi by, you know, multiplying, taking Fourier transform, and so on and so forth. Okay, so what's behind this transformation is really that the quantum mechanical interpretation of position is multiplication, operator multiplication by x, and quantum interpretation of momentum is derivation with respect to x multiplied by ih bar. So that's what's behind this transformation. Yeah? All right, so to answer your question is in this line, these operations are actually isometries between the space of operators such that they're, say, essentially the square of the operator is trace class, that's called the curly L2, and so it's an isometry between this space of operators and the square integrable functions of x and p, actually, the square integrable functions of x and p. Okay, and the inner product in this funny space of operator is just a trace of rho times the adjoint of sigma. That's an inner product on L curly L2, and the inner product on L2 is just this. And here you have a I'm a mathematician, so I denote complex conjugation by a bar and not a star. So here you see, for instance, that you really deal with complex valued functions. Okay, yeah. It is linear as a function of the operator. As a function of the operator, you see it's a purely linear transform. So you have rho and you have w. This is a completely linear transform. Okay. All right. So then from the quantum Liouville equation of for rho, you Wigner transform it and you find what's called the Wigner equation. That's very close to this part is very close to the Vlasov equation, but for the fact that the field operator here, what was in the Vlasov equation would be grad xv times grad PW is actually a much more complicated pseudo-differential operator. But of course, you can check that in the semi-classical limit, you get back to the usual object. Well, yeah, something which to be specified is that the Wigner if I take the Wigner transform of the Hermitian operator rho, trace class operator rho, what I get is a real Wigner function, but not necessarily positive. It might be negative, in fact. So in fact, the interpretation of W as a distribution function has a certain caveat, in the sense that it might be that certain places W is non-negative. However, the right interpretation of W is by this formula. Actually, this formula defines what's an observation of the system. If you multiply the Wigner function W by an operator A, which defines an observable, then you get the observation of the system. And in fact, this formula tells you that if you look at the observation of the system, you can express it in terms of the Wigner transform, the Wigner function itself and the Wigner transform of the observable. Okay? So in this sense, the Wigner function is really a distribution function. It has to be understood in duality against an observable, okay, rather than a pointwise value. All right. And again in the Wigner transform, in the Wigner equation, I have a collision operator, which is a Wigner transform of the collision operator on the density matrix, which so far I will not specify. All right. So let's also, now that the setting is laid, let's look at what's previous quantum hydrodynamic theory. And I apologize because probably this section is very incomplete, so probably I will miss a certain number of works. Essentially, it started with one particle quantum hydrodynamics, and this is very easy. You start from the Schrödinger equation. You decompose psi into the modulus and the argument. So the modulus, you write it at square root of a certain number n, and the argument, you write it like the phase divided by h-bar, and that's called the Madelung transform. And if you define the velocity as the gradient of the phase, you insert this into the Schrödinger equation, take real and imaginary part, then you end up with a system, which is the mass conservation equation, usual form. And this equation is the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. And you have this extra term, which comes from the fact that you studied from the Schrödinger equation and not from the Newton's equation. And if you take the derivative of the phase equation, then you get a kind of momentum conservation equation, which is written this way, in which you see you can write the contribution of the quantum mechanical contribution as an extra potential, which is added to the external potential in this way. And this extra potential is just the Laplacian of the square root of n divided by the square root of n. This is called the Bohm potential. And actually, this formulation has been used recently by chemists to solve the Schrödinger equation and to look at certain chemical reactions. But it's completely equivalent to the Schrödinger equation, completely equivalent. All right, so in terms of mathematical terms, it's a pressureless gas dynamics with an additional term, okay? And pressureless gas dynamics is not a very well-posed problem. It's a weakly ill-posed problem, so we do not like that very much. All right, so that, of course, if you want to do the many-particle case, then instead of starting with a Schrödinger equation, you're going to start with a statistical state, that is density operator. So you're going to do the Madelung transform on each state, and then you will have to average over the probabilities, and then you find a closure problem that was highlighted by Professor Manfredi's talk a few days ago. Okay, so you have various closure strategies which have been explored in the literature, which I know of. So Gardner, for instance, proposed the Fourier law for the heat flux. There is a small temperature asymptotics, which has been proposed by Gausser, Markovitch, and Ringhofer. And more recently, Gardner and Ringhofer proposed the Chapman and Skog expansion based on the introduction of some phenomenological collision operator in the equation. And so I'm going to speak about this late approach by using entropy minimization. So now we're the core of the subject. So how are we going to pass from essentially the Wigner equation to a set of hydrodynamic equation and solve a closure problem, and can we get inspiration from the moment, entropy minimization principle that we use in the classical case. So let's first look at so we have to define what are moments for our quantum system, what is the entropy. So that's the two things we have to see first. And so let's look at moments first. So in moments, we are going to define them like in classical mechanics here at the moments of the Wigner distribution function. So suppose that I take a list of functions of p, which I call mu I of p. That is, for instance, 1 p and p squared. So for short, I denote by mu of p this vector of moments, of monomials of p. And so from a Wigner function w of xp, I'm going to construct a list of functions of x and x only by integrating this guy against this list of monomials. So that's basically how I get the mass, the momentum, and the energy. Actually, this definition is completely consistent with the quantum mechanical definition of what's an observation of the system. So that's really the local observation of the system of the moment. For instance, the integral of W P dP is really the local observation of the momentum of the system. So, in fact, you can do actually more. You can do more moments in the spirit of Day's approach, but I will. What I'm going to say is completely independent on the number of moments you take, but I will focus on the hydrodynamic moments 1p and p squared. All right, so the moment method goes like in the classical case. You integrate with respect to this vector mu and multiply by this vector mu and integrate with respect to p. So, of course, here you get the ddt of the list of moments you've taken. Here you get the divergence of some fluxes, and here you have disclosure problems because, again, mu times p gives you a list of monomials of p which are not in the list of mu. So you have the closure problem here. Then you have the moment of the field operator, the moment of the collision operator, and again, I assume that the collision operator is going to conserve the moments I'm considering. So I get that this in an integral of, yeah. Okay, so what I have already done a certain reduction in the sense that I describe a many particle system as a one particle system in which I have put into the many body character into this collision operator Q. So I do exactly like we do in the Boltzmann equation, basically. We use a one particle distribution function to represent a many body particle system. And I agree that this reduction to that state is completely not solidly established so far. But this is my starting point. I will show you. We can do whatever statistics you like. But I show you. Actually, I focused on the Boltzmann statistics, but actually we have done the paper is written in a fairly general framework. We can do boson, fermions, yeah. That's right, and in the definition of the entropy we're going to use.
But also in the potential V, if you couple the boson equation.
Right, absolutely, in the potential V too, yeah. That's right. Okay, here I assume that for this approach it doesn't matter whether V is coupled with W or is given, but then you have to worry about that. All right. So the closure problem is finding an expression for these guys. So we are going to use the entropy minimization problem to solve this closure problem. And what's the entropy? Now, the entropy for the quantum system cannot be defined as a local quantity like in the classical system. You cannot really speak of the entropy at a point like in the classical case where you integrate f against log f minus 1 dp, then that gives you a value of the entropy at a given point. For a quantum system, the entropy is a completely global quantity, and the reason for that is that it is defined in terms of the probabilities rho s. Basically, it's a combinatorial count of the rho s times log of rho s minus 1. This is a sum. The entropy is a sum over the s of rho s log of rho s minus 1. So So in a fancy way, mathematical way to express that is to saying that the entropy is the trace of the operator rho times log rho minus 1. So the operator log rho is the operator that you get when you diagonalize rho. Okay, then you have you have a diagonal of the eigenvalues. Then you take the log of the eigenvalues, and then you maybe change back to the basis you started from. So that's taking the operator which has eigenvalues, log of the eigenvalues of rho. So that's the definition of the entropy for a quantum system, and it's completely global because rho s is just globally defined for your whole system. All right. Now the entropy minimization principle is going to be given as the following. I'm given a set of moment m, which are, you know, given everywhere. So at any point x, I know what's the value of m of x. And I'd like to minimize this guy, subject that to the fact that now it's a global quantity, so I have to specify what are the moments everywhere. And I want to minimize this guy, subject to the fact that the Wigner transform of rho integrated against mu is going to be equal to this list of moments everywhere. So instead of being a local entropy minimization principle, it's a globally defined entropy minimization principle. And you see that in some sense there is some mismatch because the entropy is given in terms of rho, the moments are given in terms of W, so I have to sort of go back and forth from the density operator to the Wigner transform. And to solve this minimization problem, I had to do something. So I'm going to choose to express the moment constraints, these constraints, in terms of the density operator. And so for this, I'm using the isometry between the functions and the operators. But this isometry goes when I have a double integration with respect to P and X. And here I have only one integration with respect to P. So in order to get a double integration with respect to P and X, I'm going to dualize this relation. That is, I'm going to take any test function, multiply, integrate with respect to x. Okay? So if I dualize the moment constraint, I take a vector of arbitrary test function lambda, okay, and multiply the previous expression by lambda and integrate with respect to x, this is what I get. W, so the Wigner equation, mu of p is my vector of moment, this is an inner product, mu, so it's mu 1 times lambda 1, this lambda is a vector, so that's mu 1 lambda 1, mu 2 lambda 2, et cetera, et cetera. And then here I get the moment integrated against the lambdas. And now I recognize here the inner product on L2 of R2D, which I can transform via my isometry into something which acts on the operator. So this is going to be the trace of the inverse Wigner transform of that guy, which is nothing but rho, times the inverse transform of that guy. So that's the inverse transform of mu of p times lambda of x. And here you see that now I have a mixture of these p and x variables which do not commute. So that's by no means the inverse transform of mu of p times the inverse transform of lambda of x. If the moments wouldn't be dependent on x, I could do this decoupling, but here I can't. So here I have to deal with this rather complicated object. So in fact, now the minimization problem is minimize the trace of rho log rho minus 1 subject to the fact that this relation trace of rho times the inverse of mu p lambda x is equal to the integral of m lambda dx, okay, for any test function lambda. But however, this is nice because essentially the lambdas are already the Lagrange multiplier of the constraint. So you just have the solution of the problem is rather easy. And actually what you find is that after a certain computation is that the rho... Okay, so actually I should stress something here. I chose the Boltzmann entropy. If I take, instead of this, if I take a convex function h of rho, I can do the same. Okay, and at this level, instead of getting the exponential, I get the inverse of the derivative of H. So if I take, for instance, the Fermi-Dirac entropy or the Bose-Einstein entropy, here I get some different expression, but I can do the same. So this is in the way I can account for quantum statistics. So what I get is the solution of this minimization problem here is going to be, so it's very easy actually, very straightforward computation. The operator, depends on the Lagrange multiplier of the problem. So the alphas are the lambdas, in fact, the Lagrange multiplier of the problem. These are functions of x, okay? So you take these Lagrange multiplier, which are functions of x, multiply by the vector of monomials p, That makes you a symbol, a function of X and P. You inverse Wigner transform that. That gives you an operator, and you take the operator exponential. And that gives you another operator. Okay? So in fact, if you take the Wigner transform of that guy, okay, then you in fact can write the thing very nicely in terms of what we call the curly exponential. So this curly exponential of that function. So that's a function of XP. That's a function of XP. And the link between the two is that curly exponential. That doesn't look too scary, but actually, if you look in details, what this guy is actually quite scary. Because you take this function, W, you transform it into an operator, take the operator exponential, and back Wigner transform the result. So that's a highly nonlinear, non-local transformation. Okay, takes you the value at a given point of this guy depends on the value of this guy at all other points. But okay, that's the way it is, and that we call that the quantum exponential. And actually, you can see that this is exactly what you would like to call a quantum Maxwellian, because a classical Maxwellian can be expressed just this way. Here, the alpha are what? Alpha in the classical case would be the chemical potential, the velocity, and the temperature, which are the dual variables of the density, momentum, and energy. Okay, so you can define the Maxwellian in the classical case as the classical exponent, in the classical case, of this function alpha of x dot mu. Okay, here you go from the classical case to the quantum case by just replacing the, say, real exponent by the operator exponent. Okay, so as you should, in fact, quantum theory is rather a theory of operators rather than a theory of scalars. It will come later. Actually, this is the Legendre transform of the entropy. Okay. All right. So if you do that, then in fact you see that you have, of course, if you're given a set of moments n, q, and w. You will have to find these alphas, these Lagrange multipliers, being such that the integral of these guys against the moments are giving you n, q, and w. Okay, so you have two sets of unknowns. You have your moments, and you have these unknowns, which are the thermodynamically conjugate variables, which are essentially chemical potential, velocity, and temperature. And so you, in classical case, you can have the choice of expressing your system either in terms of the moments, that is the conserved variable in some sense, or in terms of these parameters, which are essentially the entropic variables. You can express the fluid dynamics in terms of the evolution of the velocity and temperature, for instance. This is used in practice. So you can choose one set of variables or the other. And it turns out that if you choose, instead of the moments, if you choose the alphas as being the dynamic variables of your system, then it gives you now, the moment system gives you a completely closed system in terms of the evolution of these guys. So that these are nothing but the moments, which I expressed in terms of the alphas. These are the fluxes. You see they are multiplied by P here. This is the contribution of the field operator, and the contribution of the collision operator vanishes. So that's a completely closed system in terms of the alphas. If you like, you can express it in terms of other moments. And actually, I'm going to do that I'm going to skip the entropy, although it's important. I will go back. If you want to express it in terms of the moments, and actually for the example of hydrodynamics, this is going to give you this set of equations. The only difference with the classical case is that the pressure tensor and the heat flux vector actually might not be. The heat flux might not be zero, the pressure tensor might not be diagonal, and also they are related, the pressure and the heat flux are related to the moments via the quantum exponential and via this set of variables alpha, which are conjugate to these nu and w, in the sense that, okay, here I've written alpha dot mu explicitly is of a plus b dot p plus c p squared, where a, b, and c are actually functions of x and t, and which are related to nu and w, such that this relation holds, okay? So in fact, you have a classical hydrodynamic system, but for the fact that you have a non-local closure for the pressure and heat flux. Back to the entropy, just to say that you can define a fluid entropy for this system. Actually, the fluid entropy in this case will be a globally defined quantity, not a locally. So that's essentially your usual fluid entropy integrated over x. So just a function of T. But the important thing is that this entropy along the trajectory of the quantum hydrodynamic system is going to decay. So that's so that you find actually these systems are compatible with the entropy decay, compatible with the second principle of thermodynamics. Well, actually, again, I use the mathematics, mathematician's convention of the minus the physical entropy. Yes, but here also I have to suppose that the collision operator actually is, yeah, of course, because otherwise I cannot play, there is no ground to play the entropy minimization game. I said at the beginning that I keep from the collision operator the fact that it decays the entropy. All right, so I have a few minutes left. So actually what the point is that from there, and actually I have no physical argument for that, but we can define collision operator which do a good job by just extending the classical expression of the collision operator. So let me give you this. So you start with a classical Boltzmann operator, which I recall here for you. So it's usual expression. You have the quadratic terms here. So you have the usual relations between the incoming and outgoing momentum. And you list the properties, the good properties of this guy, is that it preserves mass, momentum, and energy locally. Its kernel are the classical Maxwellians, and it dissipates the classical entropy, Q integral of Q log of U, Q of W log W dW. So you'd like to find a quantum Boltzmann operator which is as close as possible as this one in terms of the expression, which does preserve mass, momentum, and energy locally, whose kernel are the quantum Maxwellians as previously defined, and which dissipate the quantum entropy, which would be defined like that, the integral of Q of W. So this curly log is defined exactly in the same way as the curly X. So that means that you take the inverse Wigner transform of W, then take the operator logarithm, and then back the Wigner transform the result. And that gives you the operator log expressed on the Wigner function. So that's the way you can express entropy decay for a quantum system is the following way. So the proposal I make is the following. Well, you get an operator which does exactly the right job if you just replace in these terms the W's by some operator of W. And this operator of W is just you take the W, take the operator log, and back take the classical exponent of the result. So if I just look at this expression, it has all the requirements I had before. Of course, I have no reason to say, I have no microscopic analysis of what's going on during a collision to justify that expression. Just a remark, that expression of the collision operator is consistent with the properties I've listed before. And you can do also the same thing for the BGK operator. Actually, you can write an operator in which you project W onto the quantum Maxwellian, which has the same moments as W, like in the classical BGK operator. And this, again, is has a quantum H theorem, and that's a proof by Florian Meyers, which is rather nice. Okay, so next step is that the quantum hydrodynamic is one thing, but semiconductor people and actually some gas discharge people also are used to using drift diffusion or energy transport models rather than hydrodynamics. Sure. There is quantum coherence, of course, because the fact that the local I think this is precisely the kind of situation where this kind of model would be adapted. Because, in fact, these are, if you look at a very large scale models, in fact, you're going to lose a quantum coherence on the large scale. So, in fact, you're not going to be very different from a classical hydrodynamics with local closures. But here, since I keep a coherent scale, which is of the order of the system, actually, it cannot be a too large a system, so it's really a mesoscopic description. So I think this is precisely the kind of situation where, I don't know exactly what you're referring to, but I suspect that's exactly the situation where this kind of model could be actually used.
This is not a discussion for the seminar,
yeah.
But the way the hydrodynamic equations look for, say, quantum equilibrium, for the superfluid medium, is not exactly that.
Okay.
Model.
I think from this approach you can elaborate, you know, you can make more fluid variables, you can do many things. We thought of, for instance, using this for, you know, phonons, or in quantifying the, using a second quantization and do something with that. So all this can be done. We haven't done that yet. So there is a huge, space for many improvements and developments from these ideas. Okay, right. Okay, good. I will go back. Actually, we recover the Bohm potential in a certain limit, and I'm going to go that. Actually, this is one of the topics which I want to discuss in the drift diffusion case. All right. So the idea is that I would like to reach a diffusion regime rather than a hydrodynamic regime. So we're going to change a little bit. So now we are going to make the collision operator is important. So we're going to take the BGK operator, which I've just shown, and I'm going to rescale in such a way that, so I have a small parameter, which is basically the Knudsen number, and I'm also looking at fluid regime, so I put diffusion regime, so I put an epsilon in front of the time derivative. And as a collision operator, actually, I'm going to relax to a Maxwellian with zero mean velocity instead of and so I'm not going to preserve momentum. I'm just going to preserve mass and energy. So that preservation of mass and energy is going to set me the values of A and C, of the functions A and C, by this equation. And actually, that is going to give me a so-called energy transport model. But actually, if I fix the C to be a fixed temperature, if I look at, you know, interaction with a thermal bath, then only the A has to be fixed by only one conservation equation, which will be the mass conservation equation. This is going to be the second case where I take only one moment, and then I will get to a quantum equivalent of the drift diffusion model. So how do we do that? So we let epsilon to zero, we do the diffusion approximation. So this is the standard, you know, you turn the crank as, you know, as how our masters have told us how to do. I don't know who said that, but that's really true. So, and eventually we end up with an equation like that. So that's for the energy transport. So there it's very abstract, but I'm going to make it clear. So that's ddt of this is actually an evolution system for this two functions, A and C, which are functions of X and T. So this evolution is, you take this curly this quantum Maxwellian integrate with respect against the 1 and P squared, and then this is the flux term. Actually, now you have a second iterate of the transport operator, so that this is why you get a diffusion equation, because you get essentially a second-order space derivative here. If you do that, if you want to have this in a more familiar form, then you get an equation for the mass and for the energy. This is the mass and energy fluxes. This is the contribution of the field term. And the mass and energy fluxes are written this way, where here the pi and the q are tensors, which are non-locally related with N and W via the quantum Maxwellian. Okay? And here you get actually a term which looks very much like a Bohm term already. Okay? So in a classical energy transport model, the pi and the q would be local functions of N and T, or N and W. Okay? Here are non-local functions. If you do that, these are the expression of the N. So N and W are related to A and C by these integrals, and then you compute the pi and the q this way. All right, if you do that for only one conservation, yeah? The second iterate, yeah? Because you have a because you have here, you have a diffusion regime, you have an epsilon, so you have to iterate twice in essentially to find the perturbation equation for these two guys, which set you these two guys. So you have to iterate twice the operator. It's like in the classical case. So, all right. So if you have only one conservation, that the mass conservation, then you get the usual drift diffusion equation that you can write, say, abstractly in this way, where you have again the second iterate. And if you formulate as a conservation law, that looks very familiar. So drift, mass conservation, and then the drift diffusion relation. In the classical case, this would be the just grad n or d grad n with the diffusion constant d. Here it's the divergence of a tensor pi, which is again related to the density. So you first compute the density as a function of A, and then you can compute this tensor pi. And of course, you have this ugly transformation here that you have to invert. Again, okay, these quantum energy transport and drift diffusion are consistent with entropy dissipation. Now, we like to recover something more familiar by doing h-bar squared expansion. So if I let h-bar to zero, we can prove that we recover the classical models. But if I look at h-bar squared correction to the classical drift diffusion in the expansion of this model I've shown before, then I just recover this familiar Bohm potential. So that's the contribution of the h-bar squared terms in this expansion gives me back a drift diffusion system in which, so that's not a hydrodynamics. The difference with before is that it's a diffusion system, not a hydrodynamic equation. But I get the Bohm potential. There is one just little thing, is that in the hydrodynamic case, I get a 1 over 2. Here, I get a 1 over 6. So there is a, but this has already been noticed before. Actually, this model is used by engineers who want to, and have been analyzed actually by people around Jünger and the German-Austrian school, I would say. All right, so actually, which is funny is that actually the drift diffusion term with these Eichbach squared corrections is still consistent with entropy dissipation. That's a remark, I think, which is new and which comes from the entropy consistency of these models. Entropy meaning this global quantity that's only a function of t, not a function integrated, if you like, with respect to x. However, if you do the same trick for the quantum energy transport, we cannot prove, and I think it's not true that the quantum energy transport expanded up to other h-bar squared term is consistent with entropy dissipation. I think it's not true. Because if you expand, of course, you can be consistent with entropy dissipation. But as soon as you expand, you may lose this consistency, of course, if you keep more terms than just the leading order term. Well, I think I'm basically done. So, this is the conclusion. I'd like to emphasize the fact that actually there is a related theory you can find in the literature, which is called the NESOM, Non-Equilibrium Statistical Operator Mechanics. Those promoters are people around Zubarev, actually. There are similarities, there are some differences. I think our theory is more mathematically consistent, but the ideas, actually we discovered that after having done that, but the ideas are similar, but our framework is kind of more solid, I would say. Okay, so I think I'm going to stop, and thank you for your attention.